You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at lockedonbulls.com and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, on Instagram at Locked On Bulls, and subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up there. Reactions to last night's game, would love to hear from you. So 331-979-1369. Happy Friday to you, Matt. Well, the first quarter was fun.
First quarter was a lot of fun. What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, that was actually the franchise record for most points scored in a season opening first quarter. 41. I mean, if you multiplied that first quarter out times four, hey, you got yourself a pretty fun and entertaining and high-scoring affair. Like, Bulls shot 72%. The Sixers shot 78%. In that first quarter, when I think we've talked about this as far as what to how game flow is going to go with these Bulls this season, there are going to be a lot of games like the one last night. Yes, the Bulls were missing pieces. No Chris Dunn, a late scratch because of the birth of his son, and no Markkanen, no Valentine. But even still, there will be nights when their shots at some point in the game stop falling. Their defense can't stop anything. The transition defense is non-existent. They get, you know, they get behind on leaving guys open on wide open threes, and all of a sudden, a game that they're in is a game you blinked and the Bulls were down 24. I mean, it happened so quickly, and it's because they are, as a young team, with yes, they have interesting scorers, but sometimes they're going to go cold. Sometimes they're not going to run their offense as effectively, and they can't stop anybody. And that's what we saw last night. They got run off the floor by a better team who executed for four quarters as opposed to one good quarter.
Yep, and you looked at the first quarter, complete night and day from the rest of the game. So I looked at what the Bulls were shooting as far as percentage-wise in that first quarter. They shot 76.2%. They were 16 for 21 from the field. The rest of the game, Matt, they went 28 for 80, which is 35% from the field.
Woo.
After the third quarter, they went 13 for 52 for 25% from the field. So when you do that and you score 17 points in the second quarter and then come out in the second half and score only 18 and you give up a combined 64 points, yeah, you're not going to win too many games that way. But I was curious, too, because I was wondering, I was like, I had to go back to the record book and look. I'm like, man, 41 points is a lot of points in a quarter. I'm like, I wonder if that breaks any type of record for a first quarter point scored, and it doesn't, but it got close. So the all-time leaders in points in a quarter is 50. There's five teams tied, but nobody's done it in the modern era. The last team to do it was back in 98, was a Phoenix Suns team with 50. So yeah, I was curious. First quarter, though, was a lot of fun. Let's break that down a little bit before we get to the bad. Zach LaVine, man, what a night for him. He came out, him and Bobby Portis going, feeding off of each other on the offensive end. Zach LaVine, although he did go 2 for 7 from three, he knocked down 2 3-pointers early in that first quarter, and he was getting to the line too. That's what was most impressive to me, and that was kind of a staple of what we talked about in preseason, Zach LaVine getting to the line. But he finished with 30 points. Very, very impressed with him and Bobby Portis last night.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same guys that looked the best and we were most excited about in preseason carrying over that momentum into their first regular season game. All preseason long, some guys had bad games versus good games, but across the board, all preseason, it was Zach LaVine can ball, and oh my gosh, Bobby Portis is going to take a step this season. And you saw them play a little two-man game at a couple of times in that first quarter when both of their shots were falling, and LaVine attacking the basket, as you said, got to the free throw line 7 times last night, and I loved Bobby's work in the post. For all we talk about Bobby being another stretch four for this roster, and he did knock down a couple of threes last night, his work in the post was so efficient, and he was bullying guys, and he was making like big boy basketball moves, little mini jump hooks, backing guys down, doing, you know, step throughs and all these impressive things as far as his footwork in the post, which really is a new element to Bobby's game, because he used to not be able to do that kind of stuff. When he did try to do stuff in the post, he would usually overwork and turn the ball over. But his post game last night looked so strong.
I'm glad you brought that up too, because I was wondering, like, Bobby Portis made, I think, 2 or 3 like left and right handed hooks with a little flick of the wrist. I was like, that's new to his arsenal. I don't remember him last year being very good with the hook shot, and he was backing guys down. I was very surprised by that. But maybe that is a testament to his work this summer. You know, he talked to us in September. Remember when we were talking about his conditioning? We asked him, like, what was he doing different this summer? And he said he dropped his fat percentage down from about 12, 13% all the way down to about 7%. So maybe it has something to do with his conditioning, his strength. But yes, Bobby Portis looking great and finding all different types of ways to score the bucket. He was 50% from the three-point line, too. 3 for 6 last night. He scored 20 points. Had 11 rebounds to go with that, too. 2 assists, a steal, and a block. 8 for 15 overall. Very impressed with Bobby Portis' first start this season. Him and Zach LaVine, those two guys were the highlights of this game, and there's a couple bench pieces I want to get into before that, but overall, I thought the pace at which the Bulls were playing with last night in the first quarter was exactly the way I want them to play all season long. And imagine it, if they could play that way with Cameron Payne starting and not having Lauri Markkanen, not having Denzel Valentine, those two guys, and not having Chris Dunn, those three guys are super important pieces, and when you get those guys back, I am going to be interested to see how many games the Bulls actually stay in, because that first quarter, if you don't have to play Cameron Payne, you don't have to play a lot of those bench pieces, and you actually do have guys that can stop at the defensive end, the Bulls might hang around in some of these games with some more competitive teams. But like you said, the Bulls started to get tired when their second unit came in. The threes started raining. Robert Covington was left open a handful of times.
Nobody touched him last night. It was ridiculous. Really ridiculous. The Bulls' transition defense and perimeter defense last night was laughable.
Yeah, it wasn't great. Let's just put it that way. They did limit Ben Simmons, though, as far as scoring. But Ben Simmons
to a triple-double almost by halftime.
But Ben Simmons had a triple-double, 13 points, 13 rebounds, 11 assists, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. So he had quite the night. But the thing with Ben Simmons is, the thing that they were doing a lot yesterday that I noticed was, they were running pick and roll with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. The Bulls were getting caught whether or not they wanted to fight through the pick, and a lot of times it was Justin Holiday trying to fight through those picks. All of a sudden, Ben Simmons was coming off that screen roll, and he wasn't passing it to Embiid or whoever was setting the screen. He was looking for the guy at the three-point line, and more times than not, that was Robert Covington. And he was, like we said, he was wide open from the three-point line. So they were looking for that extra pass, and the Bulls just couldn't keep up. Guys were losing their man after the first quarter of that high-paced back-and-forth scoring. Guys were just losing their man. They were getting easy buckets in transition. So it all kind of fell apart, but that'll be something to monitor too when we finally get the starters back and healthy, is guys being able to switch and what kind of defense they're going to use night in and night out. But yeah, when you've got guys on the floor, all five of those guys in the starting lineup that can score in the 76ers, it's awful tough to stop them with the lack of defense that you
None.
Have. But
None.
What did you what else did you think from this? What else did you think from this? This first half, this game overall, was there any other highlights before we have to get to the negative?
I mean, the highlight, and it kind of comes along with the negative, is the point guard situation. You and I have talked on the show about whether or not Archie Diacono deserves to be on an NBA roster and whether or not we have any faith in Campaign being the backup point guard. Well, safe to say after last night, the Campaign, we have no faith in him being the starting point guard. That's for damn sure. I mean, the guy did nothing last night. I mean, I guess I can't say nothing. That's not fair. He did dish out five assists, but he scored 0 points. Zero. And
yeah, you're not going to win too many games with your point guard scoring
no.
zero.
And I'm sorry. Like, yes, he had five assists, but there were so many times last night when he just looked lost. And I mean, Archie Diacono had a very efficient 8 points on 3 of 4 shooting, including 2 of 3 on long balls, 8 assists, 4 rebounds, 0 turnovers. Now, Zach LaVine actually was the turnover monster last night. Campaign was only credited with 1, although I think he probably deserved to be credited with a couple of more when the Bulls offense just kind of got all haywire and you know, there was a loose ball somewhere and Campaign was largely responsible for that loose ball. But it's like, there was all sorts of overreaction on NBA Twitter last night. They're like, oh my God, like, screw Campaign. He's awful. He should never play again. Archie Diacono is the real deal. He should be the primary backup point guard once Chris comes back. I'm not saying I disagree with that. I'm saying let's pump the brakes a little bit on one game. When Campaign was going up against Philly starters and most of Archie Diacono's efficient moments, and he did have some nice looking moments, came in garbage time when Philly was done for the night.
Totally agree with you.
Like, yes, he looked good, but he looked good against a team that had already packed it in.
Yeah, I think most people are already done with the Cameron Payne experience. I know Kendall Gill on NBC Sports had said the same thing, that the experience is over.
He is done with the Campaign experiment.
Yeah, I try to give Cameron Payne the benefit of the doubt, but man, when you get the opportunity to start on opening nights, this is your time to shine, man. This is your time to prove to people that you're more than just the guy that dances on the sideline as the butt end of the joke for Chicago Bulls fans. And he came out flat, man. I mean, 5 assists, sure, 1 rebound, 1 steal. He only played 22 minutes, but Ryan Archie Diacono, like you had said, I thought outplayed him last night. Same thing with Antonio Blakeney. He outplayed him too. So the point guard position is going to be something of a struggle, especially the backup point guard position. And I think you're going to see a constant rotation of guys of whoever's hot. And, you know, we tried to tell people back in the summer league, and we tried to tell people in preseason, in training camp, that, look, Derek Walton Jr., some of these other guys that they had invited to training camp, like, the Bulls like Ryan Archie Diacono. They see things out of him. He's the type of guy that gives you 120% effort. And like you had said, he was efficient. 8 points, 8 assists, 4 rebounds. Sure, it came in garbage time, but he played 28 minutes last night. 28 minutes for Ryan Archie Diacono. So they see something in him.
Compared to Campaign's, 22.
Right. So they see something in him, man. And I'm not saying he's going to be a world beater by any means, but if you're getting more production out of Ryan Archie Diacono than a guy that went in the lottery that you traded Doug McDermott and Taj Gibson for, yeah, that's not a good look. So I am very, very curious to see what Fred Hoiberg does with this point guard battle going on as far as the backups go. as we move on through the season. We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we're talking the rest of the 76ers Bulls opener last night, maybe do a little bit of a preview of tomorrow night's matchup. But before we do that, I want to remind you guys, if you're looking for some of the best written content out there for sports, whether it is about the Chicago Bulls, the Blackhawks, the White Sox, the Cubs, the Bears, whatever have you in Chicago, there is no place like The Athletic. TheAthletic.com/LockedOnBulls. Right now, you can get 40% off a subscription at The Athletic by using our URL, TheAthletic.com/LockedOnBulls. You'll be getting The Athletic's coverage of all the major teams in Chicago and all across the nation for just $2.99 a month. $2.99, that's a cup of coffee. It's worth it for all of the quality writing going on at The Athletic right now. And the guys covering the Bulls over there are Darnell Mayberry, friend of the show, Stefan Noe, and Will Gottlieb, both friends of the show as well. Go follow them. They are fantastic writers, and there's great content at The Athletic. Once again, TheAthletic.com/LockedOnBulls. Use that URL. You'll be able to sign up for 40% off. That's $2.99 a month, I promise you. And there's an app. The Athletic app is fantastic for reading things on the go, whether you've got an iPad, an iPhone, you just want to read it on your smartphone. It's awesome. Would not lead you astray on this one. So once again, TheAthletic.com/LockedOnBulls for 40% off, $2.99 a month, and you will not regret it. Be back here on Locked On.
No brainer. Do it. Subscribe. Do it. Subscribe. Great content.
Be back here on Locked On Bulls. Stay with us. Back here on Locked On Bulls, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malian, at Bulls_Peck. On Instagram, at Locked On Bulls. Go give us a follow over there. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. All right, Matt, got to talk about sort of the elephant in the room. The thing that you brought up yesterday, talking about important keys to the game, and immediately while I was watching this game, I thought of you because you had mentioned, you said, you know, if Wendell Carter Jr. gets into foul trouble early, if he gets two fouls early off the bat, the Bulls are going to be in some serious trouble. Then again, the Wendell Carter Jr. first 30 seconds of the first quarter gets a foul right off the bat. Joel Embiid was trying to impose himself, and he got Wendell Carter Jr. on a foul in the first 30 seconds. I was like, oh man, Matt's going to be right here. He's going to get two fouls right in the first 2 or 3 minutes of the game, and we're going to be screwed. Good thing for Wendell Carter Jr., though, is he made some adjustments, but it kind of affected his game. I don't know about you, but watching him, he seemed like he wasn't as aggressive because he picked up that early foul. He did want to get into foul trouble, and it seems like Joel Embiid was getting a ton of calls last night and just being able to do basically whatever he wanted. But outside of that, I think the other elephant in the room, too, is Jabari Parker off the bench. But let's focus more on Wendell Carter Jr.'s game last night. Look, it's not easy to go up against probably one of the best centers, if not the best center in basketball, in your first appearance. But I thought he tried to hold his own. Fred did get him involved a little bit on the offensive end early, yeah, and I thought that was good for him. But overall, I think we take this game by game. We see what Wendell Carter Jr. improves on. But did you see anything that you liked from him? Did you see anything that concerned you from
him? No, I was kind of expecting a game like that from Wendell in his first start. Obviously, he's going to have some rookie jitters starting lineup in his first NBA game, going against, as you said, one of the best centers in the league. We saw some moments to me from Wendell that looked like he was nervous. You know, missing little bunny looks inside, and I agree with you. I'm glad that Fred made a point to get Wendell some looks, offensive looks early in this game. Especially, you know, without Chris Dunn, like, you know, all right, so Levine's going to score, Bobby's going to look to get some points, but you know, let the Rook take some turns with the ball. But yeah, he missed a couple of easy looks. He also had a couple of rebounds that should have been his, or loose balls that should have been his, that he just kind of like let slip through his fingers. Just little nerves, jittery stuff that I saw from him, which didn't surprise me. It's one game. But you also saw things like his chase down block of Ben Simmons, and you just start salivating. And you're like, oh my God, whatever this Bulls team is this season, the fact that that kid is still going to be 19 come next April. I'm so excited for that kid. I have so much faith in his upside and ceiling on both ends of the ball. And I want more of giving Wendell Carter offensive looks. And you know, and until Markkanen comes back and until we start to get more of the, you know, the primary pieces of this offense in the fold, let the rook work on his offensive game. So yeah, it's tough when you have to try to guard Joel Embiid. And yeah, as I said, picked up a foul within the first 30 seconds of this game. I expected that. He's a rookie who tries on defense. He's going to get in foul trouble a lot, but I liked it. You know, I was like, okay, it was a nervous game for Wendell. He only got 20 minutes. Pretty much was not on the floor for most of the third quarter when things got really out of hand. He did get another little mini run there at the end of the fourth quarter, but I mean, I'm excited to see Wendell play another game. I think that was one of my biggest takeaways from last night is this is going to get ugly at times. The Bulls can't play defense, but did you see that block by Wendell? I can't wait to watch that kid play another game.
I'm just glad you brought that up. The one block, the one highlight basically of the second half was Wendell Carter Jr. blocking Ben Simmons at the rim. So yeah, I think he got his welcome to the NBA. Look, it's going to be another struggle tomorrow night, too, going up against two very good big men in Andre Drummond and also Blake Griffin. So that'll be something to watch as he bounces back, and it's tough. It's a tough first start when you got to go up against Andre Drummond and you also have to go up against Joel Embiid. So yeah, I think he's going to improve in every game, and I would have liked to see him play a little bit more than 20 minutes, but once this game kind of got out of hand, it didn't make a whole lot of sense for Fred Hoiberg to continue to trot him out there. So with that, I think we're going to see a little bit more of him as time goes on. Kind of wanted him to get adjusted a little bit as far as Fred Hoiberg's lineups go. Another person to talk about real quick, let's get to Jabari Parker. So Jabari Parker's stats in the box score might be a little bit misleading to the kind of night he actually did have. He had 15 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal. He was 7 for 16 from the field and 1 for 4 from the 3-point line. I think about 3 or 4 of the shots that Parker had made came late in the second half on wide open
garbage
easy
time.
Dunks.
Garbage time.
Yeah. Overall, once again, Jabari Parker not looking great last night, not playing a whole lot of defense, just looking kind of slow, taking contested shots when he didn't need to. I don't know what the solution is for him this year, but what he was doing was not helpful at all for the Bulls. And even when Bobby Portis was on the floor at the same time as Parker, things didn't look good. It just wasn't an overall great night for Jabari Parker.
Solution? The United Center might need another beer vendor. You know, he'd be the highest paid beer vendor probably in any stadium across the country. But I'm trying to check myself anytime I want to just throw a whole lot of shade at Jabari, because I've had this pre-installed take of I don't like the signing, I don't think he's going to work. So I tried to come into last night's game with an open mind, and I think I did for the most part. But you saw more Jabari taking long twos and bricking them. You saw Jabari not hustling on defense, whether it was trying to fight through screens or get back in transition defense. You saw him losing his guy. You saw him just, seriously, still, how is there this minimalistic amount of effort from Jabari on defense when people all over town are grilling him about it? It's like, okay, you already got relegated to the bench as a $20 million player. And a large part of it is, dude, just try a little bit on defense. And still last night, he looked like he was getting cooked all over the place. So you're doing that and you're taking long contested twos. Like, you know, we're trying to be optimistic about him playing a point forward position for that second unit. And yeah, the second unit was a little depleted because some of the second unit was playing in the first unit last night. But still, I mean, he looked bad. He just looked like a guy who doesn't fit, and who, I'm trying to find the good. I'm trying to find the silver lining. Oh, so he was the beneficiary of a couple of nice passes, and he had some wide open dunks on the baseline or just getting the ball handed to him in the paint. How much credit can I give Jabari Parker for that? Because I don't think there's much.
So Reggie Miller and Kevin Harlan, I'm not sure who brought this up, but one of them immediately said, like, oh, Jabari Parker, the guy that they signed this offseason, is the perfect fit for Fred Hoiberg's offense. And I was like, what? Wait, what? I was like, what? Wait, are you serious? Have you watched at all the Bulls in the last 2 years? Have you watched Fred Hoiberg as a coach at all? So that was just one thing, and we'll get to the other thing that annoyed the hell out of me last night about the broadcast. But yeah, overall, like, Parker's stats look okay in the box score, I guess, but like we said before, a lot of those buckets coming in garbage time when it didn't really matter. The final thing that I wanted to kind of wrap up about this 76ers game, Matt, was the fact that the 76ers got to the line 30 times, 27 for 30 from the free throw line, compared to the Bulls 9 for 12. And 6 out of those 7 were taken by Zach LaVine. Like, look, if the Bulls want to stay in games, if they want to stay in games, you've got to get to the free throw line, because the Bulls from the 3-point line shot 11 for 33 last night. 33% from the 3 is not going to get things done. And look, the 76ers had an off night from 3 too. They only went 33% too, 12 for 36.
Yeah, could have been so much worse, because a lot of those missed threes were wide open.
Oh, I know. So if the Bulls want to stay in games, you got to get to the free throw line, especially if you're giving up that many attempts from the free throw line to your opponent. Like, 27 for 30 compared to 9 for 12. Yeah, you're going to get beat every single time. So the Bulls have to. Other guys besides Zach LaVine have to get to the free throw
line. Exactly. You know, and that's not really a big part of Bobby's game right now. It's like, if he gets fouled working in the post, then he can go to the free throw line. But to me, outside of LaVine, the guy who can really attack the basket and get to the free throw line is Chris Dunn, who wasn't in last night. So, like, campaign ain't drawing free throws. That's just not, that's not happening. It was rough. It was rough to see the Bulls get, you know, blown, you know, get the doors blown off in that, you know, the huge discrepancy in free throw attempts. And credit to the Sixers, 90% from the free throw line on 30 attempts. That's probably going to help you win a lot of games if your team as a whole can step to the free throw line that many times and be that efficient from the charity stripe. Yeah, it was a rough night. It went kind of exactly as I expected it to. You know, you try and find some takeaways. We'll see how Fred Hoiberg adjusts based on what he saw and what he has these guys looking at today to get ready for their game against the Pistons tomorrow. Hopefully we get Chris Dunn back. Like, you know, hopefully, all right, welcome, baby boy. I got to go work, you know. I got to go put food on the table. And I know we all have our hesitations about how good Chris Dunn might be and how much he might be able to improve his game this season. No question. Seeing Chris Dunn in there, Oh, thank God. Oh, thank God. We don't have to watch another game of Cam Payne in the starting lineup.
Cam Payne is going to be, he's going to continue to be the butt end of jokes all season long. Like, and I'm so disappointed too, man. And look, it's only the first game, but after the 6 weeks we saw at the end of the season last year, I thought maybe there might be a little glimmer of hope for Cameron Payne, but last night's...
Right? There were a couple of moments last season when he didn't look terrible.
Shot over 40% last, but in the last 6 weeks last year, was averaging like 7 assists per game, so I don't know if that's going to come back anytime soon, but I think I'm ready to be completely done with the campaign experience, too. A couple other things, too, mm-hmm. I just wanted to mention real quick. The Bulls got absolutely destroyed on the boards last night, and a lot of that contributed to the pile on the Philadelphia 76ers had. They had 27 and 37 points in the second and the third quarter, and they were just getting bodied on the glass, and that's to be expected. Think about the length of the 76ers last night between Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and Dario Saric. But,
I mean, at one point, Markelle Fultz beat out Jabari for an offensive rebound and a putback. I'm sorry. And, like, not to single out Jabari, there were a lot of Bulls last night who were not putting the work in on the boards, but there was another one when, you know, it was like Dario Saric or Covington or somebody. There were four Bulls in the paint. Thus, nobody contested the wide open three, and they still didn't get the defensive rebound, and they gave the Sixers an easy putback. How are both of those things happening simultaneously? Drives me crazy. Either contest the three or get the rebound. But to not contest the three and also let one guy beat your four guys in the paint and get a putback second chance point? Come on. Like, that's unacceptable. Unacceptable.
To Jabari Parker's defense on that one play up against Markelle Fultz, if you go back and watch the replay of it, that's actually not Jabari Parker's fault. Watch Antonio Blakeney on that play, and he doesn't box his guy out. Markelle Fultz speeds around Antonio Blakeney. Well, Antonio Blakeney is just looking at the rim, just kind of standing around, not boxing out anybody. That's why Markelle Fultz was able to get to the basket easy and put that putback up. So that wasn't necessarily Jabari Parker's fault. That was more on Antonio Blakeney than anything else. But yeah, the overall common theme was nobody boxed anybody out. Everybody just kind of stood around to let the 76ers get a shitload of second chance points. So,
and on that, you know, before we just pile all of this on Jabari, the team effort defensively last night was shit. Pardon my language. It was shit. It wasn't all on Jabari. That team looked disorganized. They looked like they were indifferent on the defensive end. And clearly some of that has to do with Chris Dunn not being on the floor.
Totally.
He's going to be their leader on defense. He's going to set the tone. He is going to be a vocal leader of that starting unit. And he was deeply, sorely missed last night. But to your point, oh my God, Antonio Blakeney. We're talking about how, you know, he can be a microwave scorer off the bench. He did put in 15 last night, but not super efficient. He was 6 for 16 for 15 points, and that guy can't guard a street cone. That dude can't guard anybody. He was just a little bit of a screen, and the guy's just lost forever. For all of the people trashing campaign last night and this morning, yes, campaign was bad. Antonio Blakeney is like a darling, kind of, because of his ability to, you know, pour buckets in. He is, you know, and we'll see if this has any influence on Fred and his backup guard rotation. Most often, Fred's going to need those points in a second unit, but Blakeney can't guard anything.
Yep, I agree too. But what's weird is Antonio Blakeney was the only Bulls player in the plus minus that was positive last night. Like you had mentioned, 15 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, only turned the ball over once, but he was a plus 6, and that was the best on the Bulls team last night. And he played 30 minutes last night, so we'll watch that a little bit. I think it's going to take some time for Blakeney to get to a point where he can actually be bearable on the defensive end. He's got a lot more work to do than, say, guys like Jabari Parker, who've been in the league for 3-4 years and should be able to defend. So,
hey, and you know who we haven't even mentioned yet on today's show, who, speaking of Blakeney being the only positive in the plus minus, the worst, coming in at minus 29, Justin, not going to work here anymore, Holiday. Wow.
And man, what did I tell you last night too? The Bulls came out and scored 41 points in the first quarter. Justin Holiday made all 4 of his shots in the first quarter. He went 4 for 12. I think he was 4 for 7 after the first quarter, finished 4 for 12. So I told you, if the Bulls are going to stay
2 for 9 from downtown.
If the Bulls are going to stay in it, Justin Holiday's got to be on a heater that night. And he can do that.
Meanwhile, you know, you don't have Denzel Valentine. Hutchison didn't get in the game until under 2 minutes left, I believe.
Thank you for bringing that up, because like, that's another thing that I think Bulls fans are worried about.
Is it that bad? Is he that bad? Is his shot and his shot release that slow that Fred, in a game when you're down 20 already, the game's in the books, Holiday's had a rough shooting night, and you don't need to, like, get Holiday more run to build his confidence. No, he's Justin Holiday. He's a warm body. Like, let the rookie get some minutes. Let the rookie get some run against Philly's second and third units. Maybe build up a little bit of confidence. How is it that Holiday was so blah last night, Denzel's still on the shelf, and Hutchison didn't get in the game until the final 2 minutes? I that's ridiculous.
Speaks to kind of what you had brought up maybe last week or the week before, what you were hearing about how Fred Hoiberg probably just doesn't see him as a fit in this rotation. And that speaks to the volumes of what happened last night too, that backs up everything that you were saying a couple weeks ago, that maybe this is not as ready as we thought he was going to be. And for the Bulls to promise this guy at 22, and that was kind of the conversation on Twitter last night, was, you know, to take him at 22 to sell the fan base that he is an NBA ready type of player after 4 years in college and can't even get on the floor in the opener after you're down a 20 piece, like, that might speak to what Fred Hoiberg thinks of Chandler Hutchison, at least early. But yeah, I was very surprised he didn't get in the game with the lack of depth the Bulls had last night. It's kind of crazy. So I think you're right in saying last week that he might be spending a lot of time in Rosemont this year.
Yeah, I think that it's, with the Bulls shorthanded, you know, missing Chris Dunn, missing Valentine to injury, missing Markkanen to injury, Hutch couldn't get any run until this game was pretty much all wrapped up and finished. It definitely says something about the confidence or lack thereof that Fred has in that rookie's ability to be ready. And he's starting a 19-year-old one-and-done player, and Hutchison is a four-year guy who's 22. One of them started and looks like probably the player on this roster with the highest ceiling, and one of them couldn't even get into the game. Both first-round picks. There is the gap between 7 and a draft promise at 22.
Tough look. Tough look. Last thing, Matt, before we get out of here for the weekend. The thing that pissed me off the most about the broadcast last night. How many damn times are they going to bring up the fact that Markelle Fultz, every time he gets the ball, oh my God, watch the crowd, watch the crowd. Reggie Miller had to have brought up the crowd when Markelle Fultz had the ball probably 75 times last night. On the broadcast.
Yeah.
Why do we care about Markelle Fultz and whether or not he knocks down a shot and if the crowd goes crazy? Who cares about Markelle Fultz? Stop bringing it up on the broadcast. After the second time you said it, we get it. We can see it. We can see and hear the crowd screaming for Markelle Fultz. We get it. You don't need to bring it up 75 times on the broadcast. And every time you don't have anything to talk about, you just revert back to, oh, watch the crowd as they get heated up as Markelle Fultz knocks down a jumper. And every time he wants to take a three, shut up about Markelle Fultz, please. Please. The guy had the brokest jumper last year, and Markelle Fultz is all of a sudden getting the most talked about rain on the broadcast. Are you kidding me, Reggie Miller? Hey, how about Wendell Carter Jr. coming down and blocking Ben Simmons on that? And they don't say anything. They don't say anything about Wendell Carter Jr. other than the fact that they like to make fun of him on 7 or 8 occasions in the broadcast about him looking up to Joel Embiid. How many times are they going to bring that up about Wendell Carter Jr.? That also pissed me off.
Well, good news, Jordan. This was one of only a handful of games where you will have to deal with the nationally televised broadcasting duo. Because the Bulls only have a couple more nationally televised games on the schedule.
Thank God.
Reggie's always been a repetitive color commentary guy. There were a couple times last night where I had to like check myself and double take. He actually just said the exact same sentence within a matter of minutes as far as the commentary of the game. I'm like, what are you doing? Did you just like not have anything prepared for this game? As far as Markelle Fultz, like, I think it was just kind of funny that the Sixers crowd was just so sarcastically supportive and cheering him anytime he made a bucket or did anything, because there's a lot of fear that is a wasted lottery pick. Everybody's super high on Embiid and super high on Simmons, and rightfully so. That duo torched the Bulls last night like they torched them every time they played the last season. Fultz is a guy who many were saying might be the next hot best point guard prospect coming through the league, and the guy's so broken right now. So, you know, I get it. It's funny. The sarcastic clap. Essentially, is what Philly was doing for Markelle last night. And it's funny, so fine. You want to talk about it on the broadcast? But yeah, no. Talk about beating a dead horse. Let's say this joke until it's no longer funny and everybody hates everybody.
It's ridiculous. And he didn't even have a great night last night. 5 for 15 from the field, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, and 12 points in 32 minutes. It wasn't that great. Stop bringing Markelle Fultz up, please. And it bothered me the entire time. 95% of the conversation was about the 76ers and the times that they were bringing up the Bulls. It was to mention the fact that, oh, why does Wendell Carter Jr. look up to Joel Embiid? Like, they're only 5 years apart. Well, yeah, I get that. Wendell Carter Jr. was 12 years old when Joel Embiid was entering his college days. So, yeah, he can actually look up to him. I get it. It's a little weird, but still. Like, what's the necessary need of bringing that up 8 million times and laughing about it on the broadcast?
Well, I mean, of the people tuning into that nationally televised TNT game, Jordan, who do you think was the team that more people were interested in, that more people want to watch play, that more people see big things for this season? It's not the Bulls. It's Philly.
Right.
It's don't bury the lead. The lead is the process. The lead is Embiid and Simmons. And, oh, by the way, their other lottery pick, Markelle, is a total question mark coming into this season. So they leaned on that, and they leaned on that heavily as a broadcast team. And yeah, it's a little annoying as a Bulls fan, but guess what? You got to tune it out. Guess what? Neil and Stacy can be annoying too. Like, you know, they're the lovable, endearing homers that we get for pretty much all of our broadcasts as Bulls fans throughout the season. They can annoy the hell out of me too with their commentary sometimes. I think sometimes they're totally in the dark about what's going on.
Yeah, that's
true. It's just, you know, like as a fan, if you want to listen to the commentary, listen. If you don't, mute it. You can watch a game on mute if you just want to watch basketball.
Still, I have a feeling in like their pre-production show that it was like they have a whiteboard in front of them and literally somebody just wrote Markelle Fultz across the entire whiteboard and is like, yep, that's who we're going to center the entire conversation around tonight, even though he didn't play well. So I don't know. It just bothered me, man. Like it was tired of hearing Reggie Miller reference the crowd in Fultz last night about a billion times. So I thank God it's only a couple games, and I think this is the only game the Bulls play all year long on TNT. So thank God for that. I don't need
the TNT
to hear,
home streak lives on.
Yeah, I don't need to hear Reggie Miller anymore than I have to. So
One real quick thing. Shout out to Zach LaVine for using the term mollywopped in his post-game locker room interview last night when describing how things started to go south in the second quarter for the Bulls. Who says who uses mollywopped? That's amazing. I loved it.
Man, if there's any bright spot to this Bulls team, it's going to be Zach LaVine.
LaVine and Bobby Portis are saviors.
Yes, that is for sure. And that's at least until Markkanen gets back. And then we might be cooking with gas. But this is the Bulls team you're going to see for the first 20, 22, 25 games until Markkanen returns. And hopefully things improve a little bit once Denzel Valentine's healthy and back in the rotation. Once
Chris Dunn back hopefully tomorrow.
Yeah, congratulations to Chris Dunn on his first baby boy. That's why he was out. I know yesterday we were kind of worried. We were making sure that hopefully nothing was seriously wrong with his personal life. And turns out he's just having his first child, which is awesome.
Having a baby.
So congratulations to Chris Dunn. Hopefully we get him back tomorrow against the Pistons. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Hit us up there. Got reactions to last night's game. Got any reaction over the weekend once the Bulls go up against the Pistons tomorrow night? We'd love to hear from you. So 331-979-1369 is the place to do that. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Valley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
You ain't no Michael Jordan.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com